there's huge supply issues in the sense that we're struggling to get any eggs at all.
A massive bird flu outbreak in Washington leads to an egg shortage in Alaska. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 4th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, how smoke alarms made a clear difference between two New Year's house fires.
Smoke alarms lead to that early notification, early escape.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your new Affordable Care Act coverage options and opportunity for savings. You can call 211 or text GETCOVEREDAK to 898-211 to connect to a healthcare navigator. Enrollment is open now through January 15th. Call 211 today. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
Two house fires in Anchorage over the New Year's weekend left one person dead and another badly hurt. Anchorage Fire Department Assistant Chief Alex Boyd says smoke alarms made a key difference in the outcomes of the blazes.
Smoke alarms lead to that early notification, early escape, and the ability to get out of the home are very important things that were not present in the fatality fire.
The fatal fire was reported just before 11 p.m. Saturday, New Year's Eve, in South Anchorage. Flames had engulfed half of the home by the time firefighters arrived. After extinguishing the flames, they found the sole resident dead in the burned part of the home. The victim's name has not yet been released. Investigators believe improperly handled or disposed of smoking materials caused the fire. Boyd says firefighters did not hear a smoke alarm.
None of our crews heard or saw that, and none of the bystanders heard or saw anything that indicated it was there, and we're not finding evidence of non-working ones. So based on everything we're seeing, we think there were no smoke alarms in the home.
About 24 hours later, firefighters responded to a second fire, this one in northeast Anchorage. One of the several occupants who got out of the home reported smoke, and firefighters found an injured resident who was taken to a hospital in critical condition. Boyd says investigators believe the injured resident started the fire. He declined to specify how, pending further investigation. Boyd says that home had a working smoke alarm. He urges residents to ensure smoke alarms are in working order with fresh batteries and to have an escape plan for how to leave their home in the event of a fire. An egg shortage has hit the nation, and Alaska is feeling it acutely. An outbreak of the avian flu in Washington state has drastically slowed egg shipments north. Many rural communities only have one or two grocery stores, so their options are even more limited. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports.
On a recent snowy afternoon, Michael Yingst scans the dairy section at the Dillingham AC grocery store.
I came here to look for eggs. Tomorrow is my birthday, and I was hoping to make some banana cream pie, but it looks like we're going to be out of luck for a while.
People across Alaska are running into egg shortages. Many are posting pictures of signs and empty shelves on social media. Even large grocery chains like Fred Meyer are limiting how many eggs people can buy. Rural areas are getting hit especially hard because many only have one or two grocery stores, which leaves them with fewer options. And the shortages aren't expected to let up anytime soon.
It's not good news in any way. It's really farm dependent.
Kyle Hill is the president of the Alaska Commercial Company, or AC, which has 35 stores in the state and calls itself the largest retailer in rural Alaska. It gets most of its eggs from Washington state, and one of those providers, Oakdale Farms, was recently hit by the avian flu.
They've had to, unfortunately, deal with over 1 million birds that have had avian flu in that farm. So there's huge supply issues in the sense that we're struggling to get any eggs at all.
When they can get eggs, it's just a trickle. Hill says AC is trying to let its suppliers know that rural communities don't have a lot of options when it comes to groceries. If AC doesn't have eggs, that means an entire community might not have eggs. And that's a food security issue. But Hill says it's tough because they're competing with large national chains.
They are trying to leverage their national scale and their national distribution to get eggs from elsewhere. But, you know, when it comes down to it, there's only so many eggs out there.
Hill says pressuring suppliers only goes so far. It's a supply and demand issue, and all retailers are pushing their suppliers.
It is a fight because every retailer is making their case to the same suppliers. And then this isn't even just a Pacific Northwest issue. Down in Texas over the holidays, a friend said that they saw eggs at $9 a dozen because they have a farm down there that's having avian flu issues. So it's really farm dependent.
Those prices aren't going to be any cheaper in rural Alaska. And when supplies run low, costs go up. At the front of the store, Sarah Naniluk waits for fellow shoppers. She and several others traveled about 30 miles over the tundra on snow machines from their hometown of Manicotick to Dillingham to go shopping.
We only have one small trading store, which is owned by Manicotick Native Limited. There's no other store.
Naniluk says the price of eggs has skyrocketed.
So for Christmas, I had to buy 2 dozen for almost $20.
Another option is home-raised eggs. Alicia Swan peruses the dairy aisle, but not for eggs. That's because she and her family own chickens.
Out of 17 birds, we're averaging anywhere from 6 to 9 eggs a day. That's pretty good.
But it's not easy to keep chickens in rural Alaska, especially in the winter, when chickens tend to produce fewer eggs.
It can be complicated getting feed here, especially during the winter. You have to continually give them water because it freezes, keep them warm. So yeah, we give them extra light to keep them laying eggs. They kind of have a vacation during the winter.
Nice. And what about Michael Yingst and his birthday banana cream pie? He's trying to come up with a new plan.
Researching egg substitutes and see if there's anything else I can use as a replacement for eggs, but they're kind of irreplaceable when it comes to a lot of things, so hopefully we'll figure that out.
Dillingham's other grocery store, Bigfoot, uses different suppliers and expected a delivery of eggs today. Meanwhile, AC expects a shipment to stores throughout the state by the end of next week, but it anticipates the shortage will last for at least a couple months. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, climatologists say last month's heavy snow in Anchorage was in part due to climate change.
You know, the trend is for heavier and heavier precipitation.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
After Alaska voters chose her to serve the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term and then re-elected her, Representative Mary Peltola has been waiting to take her oath of office for her first full term. But she has sat through round upon round of voting that, as of this afternoon, had still failed to elect a new House Speaker. That's caused an unprecedented delay of action in the House, and while these are not ordinary times, Peltola is no ordinary politician. KNBA's Rhonda McBride looks back on some of the things that set Alaska's Congresswoman apart.
This has been an amazing journey that we have all been on together in Alaska.
That was back on November 8th when Mary Peltola learned she was the top vote getter in her fight to keep her job in Congress, probably the only U.S. representative to walk the halls of the nation's capital wearing mukluks, hand-sewn boots made of skins and fur in the Yupik tradition.
I'm just happy and joyous.
Marie Mead is a well-known Yupik culture bear and says she's happy Washington, D.C. finally has someone who embraces Yuyahak.
For me, Yuyahak is just being human, to live and to survive, to live honorably.
Meet says she felt pride as she watched Peltola practice Yuyahak, a philosophy on life that encourages interconnectedness, balance, and respect for others, even those you disagree with. Mead was not the only Alaska Native to notice Peltola's approach to politics and its potential.
Whether you're Democrat or Republican, she was able to identify with both sides and was able to connect with them, and I think that was the secret that people seemed to really latch on to.
Senator Donnie Olson, an Inupiat from the Bering Sea region, served with Peltola in the state legislature. He says cultural values like the Yuyahak are shaped by Alaska's harsh environment.
You cannot have anybody that's adversarial. You need to help somebody else if they're in need of food, in need of shelter, in need of friendship, in need of anything.
As a state lawmaker, Peltola was known for her ability to work across the aisle. She even became friends with Sarah Palin when she was governor, a friendship that continued even after Palin stepped into the race for Congress. During a candidates' debate at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, Palin, a Republican, acknowledged her special relationship with a Democrat.
And let me tell you, I've been involved in politics for 30 years in Alaska, from local level on up, but this is the toughest campaign because of her. Mary is and we are in Mary's house, and I know that. And I love her dearly. I'm as proud of her as all of you are.
You saw it with her and Sarah. It was that relationship that was more important than the partisanship, that relationship that was more important than the politics and maybe how politicians treat and regard each other nowadays. It was so inspiring and real.
Anton McParland, who was Peltola's campaign manager, says he's never worked with a politician so skillful at building those across-the-aisle relationships.
There are like aspects of her Yupik upbringing that she would share with me, how one speaks more in the affirmative than the negative.
It didn't hurt Peltola that Senator Lisa Murkowski, a Republican, endorsed her candidacy over the two Republicans in the race, Palin and Nick Begich. But Art Hackney, a consultant for Begich, says Peltola's election was probably due to the new ranked choice voting system more than anything else, and an element of luck when Al Gross dropped out of the special election.
For whatever reason, Al Gross, who was the top vote getter on the Democratic side, dropped out and left it all to her. So everybody on the Democratic side was able to get behind her, which means she didn't have to run a tit-for-tat primary campaign.
Hackney says Peltola may have bipartisan appeal, but it was Palin's entry into the race which split the vote between the two Republicans and paved the way for Peltola.
It left her a free ride to go be what she certainly is that everybody knows her for, which is charming. And that's wonderful. She is charming, and she does know a lot. But at the same time, the proof of the pudding will be in the eating. It depends on what she actually does back there.
Jim LaBelle, a retired Alaska Native Studies and History professor, hopes what Peltola does is to continue to draw upon her Native culture.
One person can make a difference. And sometimes you don't know who that's going to be or when that's going to happen. But when we are rooted in our values, wanting to do good for our fellow man, yeah, it could be just that congruence of time and space that Mary is at that could be that one person.
And for now, Mary Peltola is that one person who has Alaska's lone vote in the House. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Student enrollment in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District is holding steady while the borough's population continues to grow. That is according to the latest student counts and enrollment projections for the district, which point toward a bigger trend of outmigration and workforce shortages statewide. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Enrollment numbers impact how much money the district gets from the state of Alaska.
The more students we have, definitely the more revenue we have into the district.
District Superintendent Clayton Holland says the district gets that funding based on a 20-day count every October. And this fall, it counted almost 8,400 students across its 42 schools. That's about 60 students fewer than last year, but still hundreds higher than 2 years ago when COVID-19 was running rampant in Alaska. A lot of kids left the district that year. District Finance Director Liz Hayes says it's not exactly clear why that happened.
They left our district. They didn't come to our homeschool program. They didn't enroll in any of our brick and mortar schools. So I could not really tell you where they went.
While the numbers are up from where they were before the pandemic, they're not completely back to normal. And overall, district enrollment has declined from a high in 1998 of over 10,000 students. In recent years, enrollment has stayed a little steadier with a slight downturn.
We weren't seeing big increases or decreases.
The trend isn't the same at every school. Soldotna High School is seeing steady growth, for example, with nearly 660 students this year, up from under 500 a decade ago. The school in the Old Believer community of Ketchumek-Silo has been seeing a steady decline in enrollment, dropping down to 30 students in 2022 from 75 a decade ago. Looking to the future, the district expects enrollment to drop by about 100 students district-wide in the next 5 years. Population trends are key in understanding why enrollment is or isn't changing at schools in the borough and across the state. The Kenai Peninsula measured population growth in the 2020 census, but that growth was among the peninsula's older population, not necessarily families with school-age children. Each year, the district's student population makes up a smaller and smaller percentage of the borough's overall population, according to the district's projected enrollment. Overall, more people are moving out of Alaska than are coming in. Hayes says they got a glimpse of that when they tracked the birth rate on the peninsula.
We were seeing a lower incoming kindergarten class than our outgoing senior class, and they were attributing that to that we're becoming more of a retirement-type communities on the peninsula.
Holland says it's a perennial challenge to attract young families to the peninsula to work. Take Nikiski, where students have seen a steady decline in students in recent years. He says that could change if the state builds a long-awaited natural gas pipeline with a terminus there. Housing is also a factor. Hayes says on Kalifornsky Beach, for example, there are some new family units being built.
That we anticipate could increase the enrollment in that elementary school.
Seward, on the other hand, is dealing with a dire housing shortage. Seward High School counted 138 students this year. It has a building capacity of 400.
And people overall are attributing they can't afford to live there.
Even without big fluctuations in enrollment, the district is getting less money per student every year when adjusting for inflation. The component of the funding formula that's based on student enrollment, which is known as the base student allocation, has stayed flat since 2017. Though Governor Mike Dunleavy's new budget proposes giving districts an additional $30 per student next fiscal year.
Which doesn't come close to what inflation has eroded our buying power.
Meanwhile, Holland says the costs of running schools continue to climb, like for food and transportation, especially at the district's more remote facilities. It's going to be a math problem for the Alaska legislature when it reconvenes next month. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. Are you an Alaska artist or do you know one? March 1st is the deadline to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Award. The program provides awards to artists, musicians, performers, writers, and culture bearers. Amounts are increasing. A project award, now $10,000, is available for an Alaska artist at any career stage. Mid-career and established artists may apply for a $25,000 artist fellowship. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. Rasmussen Foundation, promoting a better life for all Alaskans. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Last month was the wettest December on record in Anchorage. Climatologist Rick Toman says the milestone is driven, at least in part, by climate change. As the oceans warm, more moisture evaporates into the air.
When storms come along and all the atmospheric pieces come together to turn that increased evaporation into precipitation, you know, the trend is for heavier and heavier precipitation.
That's in part why Anchorage saw more than 41 inches of snow last month, according to the National Weather Service. Juneau recorded its wettest year on record in 2022. From the interior to the Aleutians, many other towns in Alaska have broken precipitation records in recent years as well. Toman says overall, total yearly snowfall levels in Alaska aren't changing, but the season for snow is getting shorter. He says this trend of rain stretching later into the fall months and then heavier snow during the winter will likely continue.
With the warming world, with the warming oceans, this threat of gigantic snowstorms or repeat snowstorms, such as we had in Anchorage last month, the odds of that occurring go up.
The record December precipitation is also in stark contrast to the spring and summer, when Anchorage recorded some of its driest months on record. The new year is a time of making resolutions to better ourselves. And for many, that means quitting drinking, at least for what's called dry January. And for some, that means getting on the path to longer-term sobriety. That includes Alaska filmmaker Scott Burton, who's working on a documentary about Alaskans' relationships with alcohol. And as it happens, he's celebrating 3 years of sobriety today. Burton's film project is called Earnest Drinker, and he says it'll be a hybrid documentary, meaning it'll have interviews with experts, advocates, and people in recovery. But Burton says it'll also include a lot of his own stories about his relationship with alcohol.
I was a prolific drinker for 30 years. I started when I was 14. And so, yeah, it's a film about relationships with alcohol. I hope to challenge the normalization of alcohol in our country, in our state. I want to look at some of the costs alcohol has on our state. I want to look at stigmas related to words like alcoholic, sobriety, recovery, and a lot more things. That might have been long for my elevator pitch, Casey.
No, that was great. I wanted to ask you first, just, you know, instead of having a documentary that's about the things that people might associate with alcohol that are negative, you know, just calling it like alcohol, it's bad. You know, why are you looking at it more like people's relationships with alcohol, and that kind of that's the theme?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I have to acknowledge that for 30 years I drank, and while I drank, I had a lot of fun. But during that time, I also made a lot of questionable choices. And another part of that is that people have asked me about my audience for this film, and sometimes I think of the audience as me, like 10 years ago when I was 35. And if I saw a documentary that just came out and vilified alcohol use, it wouldn't have had a chance, right? I just feel like, whatever. I have no interest in that. But if I saw a film that sort of tried to take an equitable look at the spectrum of alcohol use, the spectrum of sobriety and recovery, yeah, it might have had an effect on me.
Gotcha. So I noticed in the promo video that I saw for this that you have talked to some experts already. What are some of the things that they told you about? And I wonder, you know, if it's different than, you know, just like we were just talking, like it's just that alcohol's bad. It's about thinking about people's relationships. What did they tell you about that?
Yeah, so when I was about 42, I finally got like an official doctor. and you know, signing up to see a new doctor, one of the questions is, how much alcohol do you drink? And like, I lied on the form and I lied to her. You know, I was like, oh, you know, one to three drinks a night, you know, and that was such a lie. I was drinking at least three times that. And we interview and we talk about some of those first interactions. And she just said to me, she said, Scott, drinking is dreadfully bad for you. Just having a doctor go down the list of things, you know, it can cause cancer, can cause high blood pressure, cause you to gain weight, can cause anxiety. You know, the list just goes on and on of the things that alcohol can cause. And so hearing her say that, And then in the interview, it's pretty funny. She's like, oh yeah, in the medical profession, we multiply everything that someone says by three, right? So I was like, oh, Dana, you know, maybe I was having 1 to 3 drinks on a Thursday or Friday. And if you multiply that by three, you know, it's more like 9, and it could even be more. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it seems like there's an aspect to this of when you talk about people's relationship with alcohol, that it's just such a part of our culture that people might not even acknowledge that about themselves, that you know, that might be such a big part of their life until they like maybe stop and think about it, right?
Right. You know, and that's the normalization of alcohol part that I'm trying to address. When I started drinking when I was 14, you know, everyone in my family drank. All my friends in high school drank. Everybody drank. James Bond drank, you know, in the movies. And so it would have been abnormal, in a sense, for me not to drink. And so why, this is a question in this documentary. And, you know, I think for me, I process a documentary as like a research project. So I have all these questions, right? And I'm, over this next year, I'm hoping to answer them. And one of these questions is, why in America and Alaska is alcohol consumption more normal than non-consumption?
Yeah. Is there a component to this that, as you're still putting this together, where you're reaching out to folks and hoping to interview more people about their relationships with alcohol?
Yeah. So I'm still looking for input on this documentary. And I'm definitely looking for people who may find meaning just in this conversation that you and I are having, or if this resonates with them and they have a story or an experience that they think might add to this documentary or to my research as I'm moving along. I would love to hear from them.
That was Scott Burton, the filmmaker behind the documentary Earnest Drinker. To get in touch, to learn more, or to contribute funding, check out earnestdrinker.com. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Chris Clint, Rhonda McBride in Kavitha, George in Anchorage, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, and Sabine Pooks in Kenai. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
And by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, offering guests hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and the Red Lantern Steak and Spirits Restaurant. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.